Hey folks, Jonathan speaking. Wanted to give a quick warning on our interview. One of our guests has a dog with a broken toe, and some audio noise that you're going to hear in the background is just his dog keeping himself sane by chewing on a bone in the background. It does pass after the first few minutes, so I appreciate your patience, and I hope you enjoy the show. Thank you. On the trail. Hey folks, welcome to the Hang Your Own Hang podcast, a monthly podcast about hammocks, hammock camping, and everything related. Our goal is to enlighten you if you're a ground dweller, and to entertain you if you're already a tree dweller. I'm Jonathan Kupal, and this is my co-host, Mark Baldwin.
Evening, Jonathan. How you doing?
A lot better than last month, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, that was a rough one, wasn't it?
I was so sick, man.
Yeah, that's sort of, it went through part of my house, but didn't hit myself or Matthew, so I have to say we're pretty lucky.
Yeah, I doubt I got the flu, but I'm certain I got something from one of the darned Boy Scouts that probably didn't wash his hands or decided to cough in my face. Or
yep, probably.
Oh, well.
Yeah, what can you do?
Gets plenty of rest, drink lots of fluids. Hope you get better. Yep. Today's interview is actually going to be pretty fun. We've actually got two guests today, and they're both vendors for a change.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting seeing what they have to say. It's, what they're producing is pretty interesting as well.
Yeah, so Alex Gash from Sheltowee Hammocks and Jeremy Puskas from Bonefire Gear. They will be joining us for a conversation, so let's get started. Today we've got a couple of folks here, both in the hammock business, and both have been in it for quite a while. Let's start with you, Alex Gash from Sheltowee Hammocks. Looks like you founded Sheltowee Hammocks in 2014.
That's right.
And you're still running it. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you got involved in hammocks and actually, what I'd really love to hear, too, is as you got put together the business, I'd love to hear how you came up with the name Sheltowee Hammocks.
Sure.
And kind of where that came from.
Sure. Well, my hammock journey started kind of a long time ago. In 2004, my mom bought me my first hammock as a graduation present, and it was an Eno double nest. I still got it. And that kind of got me hooked. I don't know what about, it started me sleeping in it rather than in my tent, when I'm out backpacking and stuff, but I did and loved it, even though I kind of froze my butt off, lots of times, but stuck with it.
Yep. To quote Derek Hansen, it's that it's the gateway drug.
Yeah, no kidding.
To hammock camping.
and everybody's got to go through the learning curve too of getting cold. Like you just like, oh, I got a sleeping bag, I'll be fine.
Yeah.
But people have to learn the hard way, and I'm no different. And I guess it was that that led me to start looking into bottom insulation solutions and just combing the internet, found the forums. Saw Hennessy's and I saw Underquilts soon after, and it was too cheap, I guess, to throw $300 down for one. So I figured I could try to build my own. And that's kind of what I did. Taught myself. I mean, back in the 2008, 2009, the forums were just getting started, and there were really lots of really active people openly sharing how to build these things. So I figured I could do just that good. So I tried it and off from there.
Very cool. And what does Sheltowee mean? Or Sheltowee?
Yeah, I say.
I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing it right.
No, I think that's good. I say Sheltowee. You know, we kind of say things funny in Kentucky sometimes, but it is a, it's kind of a known name around here. There's a trail, it's our long trail, it's about 330 miles. That runs north to south called the Sheltowee Trace. And it comes from Daniel Boone, who was an explorer of Kentucky. And he was captured by some Indians in the late 1700s, and they named him Sheltowee, which means big turtle. I think because he was a burly guy and kind of maybe looked like a turtle. I don't know. So that's kind of where that name came from. And I wanted to name the company something with some good Kentucky significance, and it seemed to fit. So, and it's kind of fun to say Sheltowee.
That's cool. You got some good, what's the term for it? Got some good blood, got a good bloodline.
Good bloodline, right. Yeah, it's big shoes to fill, that Daniel Boone, but we're trying to do it.
No kidding. So moving on to Jeremy Pushkas at Bonefire Gear. And yes. You started around 2014 too with your company. I'd love to hear how you got into hammock camping, and what got you into it, and what got you into Bonefire Gear, where that name came from.
Sure. So let's see. First time I ever camped in a hammock. I think the idea was I was trying to look for something that was more comfortable, trying to maybe be cool in high school and college. So later on in college, after I'd even bought one of the buyers of Maine hammocks, I was always too poor growing up to have actually been able to afford one of those Eagle's Nest Outfitters. those were for the rich people.
Not quite so highfalutin to get one of those.
Oh. So I would go to the Army Navy store that was, get a surplus bug net and seam rip it and then stitch it, because we were always taught if we didn't have it, then we could probably make it. So first real hammock camping trip was at Huntington Island State Park in South Carolina. I was the only person who stayed dry the entire weekend.
Oh, that's classic. It was like a
little DIY tarp. Everybody else sleeping on the ground, soaking wet. I was a little cold underneath the first day, but the second day I had gotten sunburned, so the cool convective breeze underneath was quite pleasant.
Mm, that's awesome.
It wasn't until probably May of 2011 when I was sleeping in my Hennessy hammock. I finally upgraded because I'd gotten a real job, and was in a 20 degree sleeping bag thinking I'll be fine. It's only 60 degrees outside. That I realized this isn't the beach. I was camping at the base of Cold Mountain, and it was freezing. I woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning thinking I was going to die, and hiked out and dragging my brother with me.
Oh.
And that's when I found hammock forms. Came home and was like, there's got to be a better way to stay warm. That eventually ended up leading to Bonefire Gear by way of not having exactly what I was looking for. Picked up a couple of hammock gear, underquilts, tried making my own underquilt as a standalone, and always got gaps and always got cold spots. So designed something for myself and never really intended to start a company, but friend saw the design, liked it, wanted some. Government wanted their share.
they always do.
So ergo, Bonefire Gear. So you asked about the name. Medicine Man on the hammock forms actually helped me come up with the name. My hammock forms handle is Fire in My Bones. Which comes from Jeremiah chapter 20, verse 9. It says, if I say, I will speak no more in his name, his word is shut up like a fire in my bones, and I'm weary to hold it. Indeed, I cannot. And I figured, a bonefire hammock just kind of made sense. Your bones will even stay warm in something like this. Hmm. So, flowed.
That's very cool. And it's an awesome name.
Yeah. Now, Alex, you approached us and suggested that you and Jeremy would be fun to have together. How did you guys meet, and how does your role as competitors affect your friendship?
Well, we met both for the first time in person at HangCon. I think it was a couple, 3 years ago. And there's really not many insulated hammock makers out there. So I was anxious to meet them. And I actually remember the day and kind of where I was when I first heard of Bonefire Gear and saw their website. And I was like, man, that thing is sweet. I mean, it's a full length insulated hammock with a bug net and it's under 2 pounds. Like, are you kidding me? So needless to say, I was a little nervous after just opening my business and then see this thing, this ultralight hammock. But turns out Jeremy's an awesome guy and was happy to meet him and hang out with him. I think we went swimming in the lake there in Florida.
We did.
So that was
in January.
Right, in January.
That wasn't the experience we had.
I was going to say, it wasn't the 20 degrees that we had at HangCon this past year.
I think it was 40 degrees at night.
Right, yeah. It was. It wasn't too bad, but I think what I heard this year, you guys had a little bit of a cold spell.
Yeah, we brought the temperatures with us.
Well, which is
people kept thanking us.
That's good.
And that's interesting because Jeremy and I actually elected to go up to the Cold Butt Hang in Minnesota. That weekend, or I guess the weekend after, and hoping for really cold temperatures like they can get. But, you know, I think it only got down to 8. So it was kind of a heat wave.
8 degrees, yeah.
Heat wave there. So funny. It was almost as cold. And
no luck on that negative 30.
Yeah. I was ready. I was ready for some negative 30 temperatures to boost my.
Oh, I was so looking forward to it.
I know.
Better you guys than me, man. We were invited to both, and we thought we were getting the better end of the deal going somewhere that was hypothetically warm.
Right. Never know.
Yeah. 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 The decision of living in Buffalo a weekend in January, do we go west to Minnesota or south to Florida?
Sure.
Sorry. You don't have to ask me twice.
That sounds like my wife.
Sorry, guys in Minnesota, but we get enough of the cold.
I traded my flip-flops for skis.
Hey, you look good on those skis out there on the lake.
Oh, yeah, thanks, yeah. Man.
So I actually remember hearing about Sheltoe. All of these, I don't know. I think Sheltoe is way better at social media than I am. When I was getting ready to launch, I kept seeing all of these hints coming soon, Sheltoe gear. And I was like, I don't know who this guy is, but he really makes me want to see what his stuff is all about. And there was such a building up of anticipation. I was not let down when I saw what he had. I knew it was different than what I was making, which is fully integrated, where Alex does gives you a little bit more flexibility and something that you can adjust and even vent if need be. We contacted each other and realized that at least at that time we certainly believed that there was enough room in the market for both of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think we're all in a great position in that the market is growing in a way that it's continuing to make space for everybody. And in spite of that, you know, insulation, keeping warm is constantly an issue for new hammockers. You know, you're in social media, you go to the forums. It's always the same question, isn't it? How do I keep warm and what's the best way to do that? How much of a struggle is it for you guys to really educate potential consumers? Like, you know, and how much of your effort, be it your marketing effort or whatever, is spend educating versus product development or simply time spent on your product itself? Because it seems like there continues to be a lot of ignorance. Like, even when you see people, like, you know, I'll admit it, sometimes on my lunch or whatever, I'll go check out YouTube and there's always the why I quit hammocking or whatever. And it was always, you know, I got halfway through the night and I froze to death. Yeah, well, there's a great example. You know, she's a talented person, but she was ignorant. And how do you work through that ignorance, and how much of a struggle is it for you?
Well, I mean, hammocks are not for everybody. And I love to see that there are people exploring hammocks as an option who would have never considered them before. I think that definitely my goal is to get people outside and to have them enjoy creation in whatever way they can. So whether that be through Alex's product or mine, I'm just glad that they're getting out and being safe, staying warm and comfortable. So for those new individuals who are coming into the market, I definitely agree. I mean, education has got to be the key. I think that what Alex is doing locally there in, I've actually got to see his shop there in Kentucky and see that he's definitely working that local market. And you start small and start to work larger. Derek Hansen, of course, his book, you can't go on Amazon and search hammocks without finding somebody as intelligible and desiring to educate the populace as Derek Hansen. Shug, even this podcast, I mean, that's what we're here to do, is to try to help people enjoy themselves outdoors. People are blown away when they see something like Alex or myself, and they're like, what is that? Is that like a mat, or is that like a blanket underneath? Do you flip it upside down? No, that's not quite how that works. But these are normally the same people who string the their hammock so tight that you could play Led Zeppelin on it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Jeremy, and I couldn't agree more. You're amazed at what you kind of, the questions that you get asked, like, oh, I've never thought of it that way. And I think for me, that's where it really does help, because I do get out. There's lots of local markets every month around Lexington, and I get out and sell hammocks and just kind of show off a lot of what I've got. And it's pretty incredible how, you know, people are just automatically blown away. One thing that always gets them is I have a tarp skin for my tarp, you know, and it's just hung up, slung up above the hammock. And then I show off like how, this is how you stay dry. And I unsheath the tarp and then sling, and then, sheathing it back up. People are just like, whoa, like that's amazing. Never seen it before. And, you know, I didn't come up with that, you know, that's been around. Tennessee came up with that, but, that's the one thing that kind of blows people away. And then, unfortunately, they don't really see the need for insulation. Like they think, oh, I don't go out in the wintertime. I don't go out when it's cold. And that's what I was saying earlier in the intro. I think that's just something that people have to experience themselves, getting cold in the middle of July, you know, in the woods when it's 65 degrees outside. But
yeah, I think you've nailed it. It's firsthand experience. Mm-hmm.
And that's where, you know, I have from the beginning, I've tried to have a demo program. Like you go to a hang and vendors are there, and even other hammock enthusiasts are there, and they bring their extra gear and they are more than willing to let some stranger try it out for the night, you know, and just to get some of that experience. And I try to have extras of my products that I can ship out to you. And I don't really advertise it. But I get a lot of interest from people who maybe don't want to throw down $350 for a hammock, just to try it out. But once they do, I get a pretty good success rate of, people that turn around and end up buying one, because I think they realize, like, man, this is there's something to this. This is pretty great.
That's been the I think that's been one of the helpful things for me, particularly individuals who are not local, is having something like a demo program, going to hangs and just, I mean, certainly when I was getting into it, I felt ridiculous when I showed up to my first hammock hang and saw my little DIY under quilt that I had put together and slinging that up underneath the Hennessy. And there were things like these blackbirds and There were all of these exotic things out there that just blew me away. And it was really getting that firsthand experience and studying in on the archives of the forums and seeing where people had come from that just deepened my love for it. And there's been success stories like that over and over again that I see on the internet.
Yeah, the hangs really bring together, and it's got to be great for you guys because you've got basically a two-edged sword where you've got your marketing where everybody can actually see and touch and, you know, not just look at pictures on the internet of it, but at the same time, you also can educate people saying, you know, this is why this is like this, and this is how you stay warm, and this is, you know, comfort can make or break a trip for a lot of people, and it could even, you know, either bring them out into the woods more or scare them away. And, you know, it's something like this can really suck them into our disease, I guess, of wanting to be out all the time.
But hey, that gets them out. That's great.
Well, I know that one of the things that blows people away that I've seen is when I'll show up in July in an insulated hammock and people see me set it up and like, aren't you going to sweat to death? And I'm like, look, I don't even go outside if it's above 70 degrees that frequently, but I'm just not even going to use a top quilt. I'm like, well, how can't you vent? I don't need to vent. I just don't use a top quilt if it's that hot. And that's kind of the way that I vent. I mean, it's like if you're at home and if your air conditioning goes out, are you sleeping on the floor? Or are you still sleeping in bed? You just toss the sheets off. And it's kind of a similar situation. And that's been a whole nother branch of education that people don't tend to think of.
Now, how do you guys choose your product lines? Now, you both have your hammocks, but then you also have some unusual items for companies known for insulated hammocks. Bonefire, Jeremy, you've got the Sparrow, Shelterox, you've got the Hammocker's Belt. Where does off items like that come in?
Sure. Well, my Hammocker's Belt really is just a way to kind of use some extra material. I use cutoffs from the hammock straps as the belt, and then sew a cinch buckle on there. It's pretty simple. It's kind of like Eno, I think, makes these kind of Himalayan flags and tote bags with the excess material from their cutting floor, you know, so they're just kind of trying to reuse material, which is nice, you know, but I don't charge five times the price, you know. It's $7 for a belt, and I use them, you know. Everybody's got to have a belt, and it doubles as a strap extender, so it kind of goes along with the product line. But I am a hammock company, and just try to make products all pertaining to hammock camping and accessories.
And so the Sparrow, my frameless pack, is a backpack that I started making. I found that ULA and some of the other ultralight pack companies were making great products, but just not quite what I was looking for. So I was looking for something that was comfortable, was light, and was functional. So that's been a huge seller in the last 2 years. It started to pick up, but I'll tell you, probably one of my best selling products is my insulated booties, the Igneous Sock. Those are used to supplement top quilts, particularly those that cinch up at the feet. You may get drafts, or if you want to get up in the middle of the night and walk around, use the restroom. These socks tend to just kind of fit a niche, and kind of like Alex said, it's a bunch of leftovers from what I make, except for the ClimaShield. That's one of the reasons I don't have to charge an arm and a leg for making it.
Now back to your hammocks. Now, the two of you do share something in common, which is that you have a hammock with an integrated underquilt in some way. Why integrated? I'd love to hear from both of you why you think that's a better solution. And obviously, there's some technical reasons too. And I think our listeners would like to understand that as well. You know, why is an integrated solution better than an underquilt that you could buy, at least for your own experience?
So with a traditional underquilt, you may have one or more series of suspension lines running up to the head end of your gathered in hammock. Of mm-hmm. course, bridge hammocks and things like that. That's a different story, which we may get into later. But that was always the most annoying thing, even more so than the cold spots, was that since I was trying to get away with the smallest and lightest, and still be comfortable hammock, 9x4 single layer, 1.1 ripstop kind of hammocks, when I'm using an underquilt, and the line is right there next to my face, it would wake me up in the middle of the night on my eyelashes or going across my nose, tickling my beard, and it was just obnoxious. So I started by trying to see how many of these lines can I get rid of by just using clothespins or other variety of accoutrements to attach it to the hammock. Eventually, I was talking on the phone with a couple of my friends, Detail Man, Free Home, and a couple of other individuals, and we said, well, why not just attach it to the hammock? And then it's never going to move. You don't have to worry about it slipping out from under you. You don't have to worry about the gaps. And I said, I think I could come up with something that would do that. So it cuts down on weight because you don't have all of this extra suspension. It makes the hammock comfortable because you don't have the suspension in your face or going up underneath your legs, or it's warmer because there's no air gaps, and generally it's shaped to fit the occupant of the hammock. Those were some of the reasons that I find that just makes an integrated hammock more attractive.
Yeah, and if you look at Jeremy's hammock, I mean, it's really remarkable how he can get all that stuff in there and have it such a lightweight package. I mean, and it's not a 9 foot long, 4 foot wide hammock. You know, it's a full length these days, 10 and a half foot full width fabric. And the biggest way he's able to shave weight is the directional quilt. Not just sewing the baffles in the direction, but it's tapered to fit the individual. And, you know, you couldn't do that without integrating it in to the hammock. You couldn't have enough suspension lines. I mean, I'm sure you could, kind of like a massive clue type suspension. But that would just be, I can't imagine the tangles that would create, but for me, it was simplicity. 'Cause you're always going to need it anyway. Like, you always need bottom insulation. Like, I don't care where you're going. Like, maybe 2 weeks out of the year in South Carolina, where Jeremy's at, you probably don't need it, but I bet you he goes out there with it, you know, and just doesn't bring anything for on top. And one thing bottom insulation does is provide protection from bugs. You know, people can get bitten through from underneath, even double layer hammocks. Like, I don't care who you are, bugs can still bite through two layers of compressed fabric. And with some quilt there, some insulation, something just to keep them away, that does it. But where I was coming from, the biggest reason was simplicity, because I was always setting up my hammock and then setting up a quilt, and I was getting inconsistent results with dialing it in and getting air gaps, kind of thing. But the big kind of shift that I was trying to create was one where it was adjustable and ventable. And that's the key to my hammock. And it's, even though I'm going to bring it out in the summertime, the insulation, when I first lay down and it's 75 degrees, it is too hot for some bottom insulation. And I pull that bottom quilt out from underneath me, and get that airflow. But it doesn't take long. It takes 15, 20 minutes for me to cool down. And I pull it back up from underneath me, and then kind of further on down the night, I'll maybe add a top quilt or whatever. But I'm for sure always going to have something underneath me. So the key with mine is that you can just kind of get that quick relief. But I've never had a night where I kept it out from underneath me. I kept my back exposed throughout the entire night. I would always get a little too cold or worried about bugs or something.
Now I'm going to follow up with probably the most common criticism, which is that you're constrained to only one temperature range for the underquilt that's attached to the hammock.
Right.
How do you propose that your customers solve that without buying multiple hammocks?
Well, and that's one of the reasons that I went with a 30 degree. And I think, Alex and I both offer multiple iterations of our hammock, mm-hmm. With a 40 degree or a 20 degree for the boom. And, I have a 30 degree and a 0 degree, with the Winter Whisperer, just the normal. But on a 30 degree or even for Alex's 40 degree, because you already have the insulation built in, and both of ours having an additional layer of fabric for the quilt itself, if you really wanted, you could slide a pad in or even add on one of the underquilts that you had before you bought one of his hammocks or picked up one of mine.
Stack them.
I've stacked comfortably down to negative 10 up on Roan High Knob in Tennessee.
And I would rather, like, if I'm going out in negative 10, I would much rather have two quilts to do the job rather than one beefy one. I mean, it's less weight and bulk if you just have one, but you get a little more margin for error if you're going up there with two. I mean, you got that extra fabric that's in there doing something, you know. I maybe wouldn't be confident enough in one quilt. I'd rather have the two. And that's exactly right. Like, you just stack them. And you can use a pad, but I try and stay away from pads. The easiest way is I would always recommend buying about the lowest that you plan on camping. Like, say you might go out in 30 degree weather. I always tell people to buy the 20 because you can vent it in the summer. And you can always stack if you want to go into sub zeros.
Mm-hmm. Well, how efficient is stacking? Is there a loss in efficiency there? How do you calculate how much you should be doing for stacking?
Well, I'm sure there's a geometric or algebraic equation that the Grizz could help us out with.
Oh no, but he's gonna write in again.
I would look forward to that episode. however, along with that, from anecdotal experience, I've not noticed any problems, even using a sawn through 40 degree stacked on top of one of the 30s, because the 30 has no air gaps in its initial bonding to the hammock. There is it almost acts like a giant draft collar.
Okay.
And I would almost think that if you're going to stack in a traditional sense, it may not be as efficient as if you stack with an insulated quilt like Alex's or my own.
Describe the first time you made something. I mean, I'm sure you guys started out doing the DIY and all. What was the first time that you looked at something that you made and thought, you know what? I think I can sell this.
I kind of laughed at that too, Jeremy, because it took a while, honestly. Like, goodness, it took just for me to be comfortable saying to sell somebody that I made. Like, it took a good 3 or 4 years of me trying to figure out what I was doing on a sewing machine. I mean, that's kind of the challenge. For I think a lot of the cottage gear manufacturers is how to efficiently get these things made. And I tried for the first 3 years before I launched, trying to find somebody else to make these for me, and just got frustrated with the results and inconsistencies, and just flat out wouldn't work for some reason or another. But this whole time I was still trying myself and getting better, and practicing, just making hammock after hammock and time behind the machine. And funny enough, you know, you practice long enough, it's something you get better at it. And, you finally sew a straight line and can say, hey, this looks pretty good. Like, I'd be comfortable charging money for this. All right.
And I think, where Alex, you may have started off more on the goal of launching a product. That was never my original goal.
Right.
I just wanted gear that would work well for me. And then my friend started saying, hey, can you make me one? And I wanted to move on to the next prototype. Because of that, it was a, sorry, my dog is talking to us all in the background. for those of you who are listening, she's broken her toe. She's, maybe she just wants to be the diva on here. but back to the conversation. That's how I prototyped. Was I made one for a friend, and I would make one of the next version for me, and then I would sell that, and just to friends. And it wasn't until kind of the joke earlier of the government saying, hey, you've got some income coming in here. And I was like, yeah.
Guess what? You're a business.
Aren't you paying us? Oh, I guess so. There you go. And that is exactly what it is.
Now, any new projects in the works or anything, or anything new that's going to be coming out?
Hint, hint.
Hint, hint.
Alex?
Yeah, there's always, there's always something new. Biggest thing for me is really getting more into marketing materials. We kind of touched on this a little bit. I've kind of recently invested in getting some actual video and pictures, professional video and professional pictures taken, just to help build a better website. And hopefully by the time this launches, the site will be active, because that kind of thing is important. People like videos. And but aside from that, there are a couple products that are coming just to complete the kit. Really, I mean, I make hammocks and tarps, integrated underquilts and standalone underquilts. And the only thing missing is a top quilt. So I've got something like that in the works.
And Jeremy?
I've got a lot of unlaunched products, things that I've been kind of kicking around for a while, a framed backpack, a top quilt, a unique kind of tarp that may be able to be set up on the ground if there's zero trees whatsoever. Gasp. One of the things I've been playing around with here recently is actually an insulated bridge hammock. So that's not, I'm not sure how that's going to go yet. I'm still only on prototype number 4, but so far I've had some really good results with that.
They're sweet. I've seen one. It's great.
That's very cool. That's definitely unique for the industry. So I'm sure that you're going to have a market for that.
Heck yeah, they're great. I mean, I've kind of a hammock fan, and I'm not loyal to just one type of hammock. I don't really believe there's that one that can do it all, I've been having a lot of fun with bridge hammocks myself recently, not necessarily making them, but just trying them out, seeing what's out there. And of course it has to have bottom insulation, right? That's what we've discussed.
Yeah, we got into that a little bit with Grizz actually, and the complexity of suspending insulation under a bridge hammock, and how it was not really as obviously easy as you'd think.
That sounds like the perfect task for Jeremy.
Well,
he'll figure Grizz it out.
And WV on the forums are two hammock camping engineering marvels. They're probably about as close to, I'd say WV's about as close to the Da Vinci of bridge hammocks as one could probably be. And using some inspiration from them is kind of what launched this, which is why I would actually want to show it to them before I'd ever even consider bringing it to market. It's not until you kind of get that, oh yeah, this looks good, that, like you were saying earlier, that I'd even really want to provide that. But I don't know. We're always tinkering with something. Seeing Alex's workshop was a lot of fun. Hopefully he'll get a chance to come and drop in and see mine sometime.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Well, it's been really fun listening to the two of you share your perspectives on what you're doing and how you're doing it. One of the things that I always like to do is I kind of like to finish up the main part of the interview with a simple question. You know, I'd love to hear if there is one thing that you could share with the world. It can be hammock related. It doesn't have to be. What would it be?
Well, I thought about this question ahead of time and had a good response, I think. And it's not necessarily hammock related, but it is kind of related to starting a business. And it's just go with your gut, you know, and trust your first instinct. I've kind of gotten burned a couple times by maybe putting my trust into somebody that I thought initially that I shouldn't. And then other times I've had good things happen when I just trusted myself and, you know, didn't kind of second guess myself. But and that goes with really anything in life. Your first instinct is usually correct. And just don't think too much about it. Just make the decision that you're comfortable with and move on.
Cool. Jeremy?
Yeah. So thinking about this myself, Luke 6:31 says to treat others the same way that you want to be treated. I mean, believer or non-believer, I don't think it matters. I think that's good advice for everybody. I think if more people, competitors or not, like Alex and I, we treat each other the way we want to see ourselves treated. And I think that the more that we can see that in the world, the better off in general that we would be. I think that too frequently we get lost in thinking, well, I'm right and you're wrong, or you're wrong and I'm right, or something. And I think that that's unnecessary.
Absolutely.
Very cool. Well, thank you for that.
And to finish up, we always like to have a little off-topic discussion. Trail names. A lot of thru-hikers or hikers in general have them. Basically, if anybody doesn't know what they are, basically it's a pseudonym. And instead of your regular name, what you go by, a lot of people use their same trail names on the forums, or you know, when they're hiking on the trail, that's their name instead of their given names. So if you've got one, what's your trail name and how did you get it? Start with you, Jeremy.
Brother Bones. I just went by Jeremy for the longest time. And again, a medicine man bought the very first Bonefire hammock. And he said, you know, I just don't like calling you by your online handle, Fire in My Bones. It's just too long. So when I started section hiking BAT in 2014, I tried it out and it was well received. So Brother Bones it is.
Oh, that's great. And Alex.
And I think trail names are one of those things you can't really give yourself. You know, someone has to appoint it to you. And my only real big through hike was in 2012, and it was on the Sheltoe here in Kentucky. And it was in November. And I wanted, starting off with the friend that I went with, I wanted to give myself a trail name and I wanted to be called Sheltoe, you know, after Daniel Boone. What better? You know, I'm trying to start this company here. But that was not accepted because, like we said, kind of too big of shoes to follow, and kind of arrogant, I guess, of me trying to call myself that. But it I got a trail name from that trip regardless. And it's kind of a funny story. We were in a Whitley City, I believe, just a small city in southeastern Kentucky, resupplying, I think getting some stuff out of a Rite Aid or something. And I was outside and of the building and with our packs and our trekking poles. And I was just holding these poles. And I guess we looked kind of silly in the middle of this town in November. And this fella came up going into the store, said, "Oh boy, let me look at them sticks. How much them cost?" And he was just marveled by the poles that I had in my hand. And I just told him, you know, I got them in a ski shop that I used to work at and blah, blah, blah. They help for hiking. But after that, I was just known as Sticks, which has kind of stuck. I always hike with my sticks.
And Jonathan.
I go by Captain Kupal. It's alliterative. But I got it actually not hiking, but rather I did this team relay run called the Reach the Beach Marathon. It was basically a 24-hour run. I did it with eight other guys and men and women, to be clear. We ran from the ski resorts in New Hampshire all the way down to the coast, to the ocean. It was about 200 miles. And they kind of made fun of me a little bit because I'm a little bit uptight. I like to be the organizer and make sure things happen. Mark can certainly tell you stories about that. Yeah. So they called me Captain Kupal because I was, you know, always the one making sure everything was on schedule and making sure things were getting done right.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Mark?
To be honest, I don't really have one. On forums, I'm just MBL1856, which isn't a trail name, but that's just, you know, M for Mark, B-A-L, Baldwin. And 1856 is the year my fraternity was founded. I was in Sigma Alpha Epsilon when I was in college. And I might have some nicknames from fraternity days, but we won't get into those. But yeah, no, I guess I haven't done anything to earn one yet.
I know. Very cool. Well, Jeremy and Alex, again, I'm really grateful that you joined us to share a little bit of your time and to share a little bit of your thoughts about the world and what you're doing to make it a better place. So thank you.
Thank you both
for having us on.
Well, yeah. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for giving us your time. It's you guys got a great relationship there, and it, you know, I wish you guys both the best of luck and a lot of success in both your businesses.
Appreciate it very much.
All right. Thank you.
So, Mark, one of the things that I thought might be fun to talk about, since we both got a brand new pair of Dirty Girl Gaiters.
Yep, which is a surprise.
Yeah, things just come in the mail sometimes. Are like clothing or accessories that you use for hiking or backpacking that you might not see anywhere else. Gaiters is a really good example. You only really see gaiters, I guess, in the backcountry. I've never seen them anywhere else.
Yeah, it's not many people you see walking down Main Street wearing a pair of gaiters.
True enough. They're kind of like chaps, I suppose. But you're never going to see me in a pair of leather chaps. They're just too sexy for me.
Thank God. I don't want to see you in a pair. But yeah, no, I've been wearing gaiters in the winter. Actually, still the same pair that I definitely have to upgrade, but the pair I have, I've been wearing heck since I was in Boy Scouts, and
wow,
I love them in the winter, especially when you've got just not only keeping snow out of your pants or out of your pants, keeping snow out of your shoes and boots, but just keeping the bottom of your pants dry. Because a lot of times, you know, after hiking, especially, you know, if it's only 3, 4, 4 or 5 inches of snow that you're hiking through, your pants stay relatively dry, but it's always the bottom of your pants, and it's always miserable when they get wet and then they freeze when you try and put them back on the next morning. And especially when we went out last month, when we went on those hikes, they were a godsend, those gaiters, just keeping everything, you know, the bottom of the pants dry and all.
Yeah, it's weird. I remember one of the boys, his pants were so wet and then they froze and like just kept their shape. It was really funny.
Yeah, and especially, you know, especially in the winter with any of us, just, you know, you don't really notice it during the day when you're hiking the first day especially, but then the next morning when you try and put those on, that could just something simple like that could really ruin a trip.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know, like, even the little ones, like the dirty girls, keeping especially sand and little rocks, and if you're walking through like pine with the pine needles and stuff, keeping those out of your socks just really changes the experience. I'm really looking forward to that.
Yeah, yeah. Just even, you know, not having to stop every, you know, whatever 100 yards or whatever because you got a little pebble in your shoe and have to get out, untie your laces, try and get it out, tie it back up. And then especially when you're – and it always seems to know, like, it'll come in and get in your shoe when you're on, like, that perfect pace where you're making miles and, you know, enjoying the woods that you're going through, and then you get that darn rock.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, I actually have a buddy who asked me if he can borrow him. He's going to be doing the Tough Mudder later in the year, and he even wants to borrow him for that. And I can attest to all the crud that gets into your shoes doing like an obstacle course run or whatever.
Yeah, although a Tough Mudder, one of those, I don't know, they might it might be a little bit more than they can handle. So that'd be, I think, the ultimate test for him.
Maybe we can get some sponsorship dollars.
There you go.
Well, one of the other things is a poncho. You only see ponchos on people who are camping or backpacking, typically, or people in Star Wars. There's lots of ponchos in Star Wars. Did you ever notice that?
Yeah, there are quite a few.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I like ponchos. You know, a lot of people, they seem to breathe a little bit better, and if you get a big enough one, I like to being able to just put it right over my pack and all as well.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan as well. It's a nice multi-purpose implement, I guess you'd call it. It's also nice, like, you can use it as a beak to cover the end of your tarp if you have a more open tarp like I do. And I've even done some camping above the ridgeline where I've used my poncho as a small tarp tent. So I've combined that with like a very lightweight bivy and actually just, you know, slept rough essentially that way instead of having a tent and getting set up inside of that.
Yeah. And especially something like that, if you're planning on doing that, that's a good, you know, help keep your weight down and everything. That's something that's multi-purpose, that, you know, it's your shelter at night, but then if it starts raining, it's also your rain gear.
Yep. And like you said, I like being able to just chuck it over your backpack. I have never understood why anybody thinks that a rain cover for a backpack keeps the rain out. It doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, that's why, you know, I don't actually, my one pack, I do have a rain cover, a built-in one, but my Osprey, I don't have a rain cover for it. I just keep everything inside the trash compactor bags. And, yeah. But, and also it keeps, you know, not even if you're with a rain jacket and also the rain, cover on the pack, you always get that rain going in between your pack and your back and all.
That's exactly the problem. There's a big open hole in the front of the pack where your back is, where rain eventually will work its way into your pack.
Yep.
So any other like weird, like clothing accessories that hikers might have that you don't normally see anywhere else?
Outside of that, I don't know. Most everything else, I don't really see that's too odd.
Yeah. I guess the only other thing I've seen, and I actually made myself a pair of rain mitts.
Oh, okay.
That you'd use like in the shoulder seasons to keep your hands from freezing if it's raining and you're hiking. Just to keep them a little bit drier or to keep the rain off, or to act as an accessory for like a pair of lightweight gloves or mittens.
Yeah. Or even going along with that and with the rain keeping off you, you don't see many people wearing a rain kilt.
Not in the Northeast.
Nope.
You see more kilts out west, like, you know, Portland, that type of thing, but definitely not the rain kilts, and not kilts at all in the Northeast. That is true.
No, not too many, except during the Memorial Day parade, during the piping bands.
Oh, right. Yeah. And it's not, so, it's the people doing the band thing.
Yep.
So. Makes sense. Cool. Well, I'd love to hear if any of our listeners have any kind of special accoutrement that they wear when they go hiking that protects them from the weather, or that they get some special use out of, and they could share it through some of our social media or share it with us, and we'll share it with everybody else next month.
We got some listener comments this month, and starting off, which is from Eric Johnson from the HangCon episode. And we all know Eric is the producer of the HangTime hook. And he said, "Wow, Spagyver did me a huge solid by bringing the HangTime hook into the HYOH podcast conversation. This was spontaneous and genuine. Sure, it is great exposure for raising awareness of consumers and retailers, but ideal for bringing attention to potential investors to get this thing rolling. Thank you, guys."
Wow. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's a great product, and it's something that's lightweight, and it's keep your electronics out of your way and viewable. I still love it.
Yeah, it's actually really cool. This is a great example of something where using the 3D printing to actually produce something that's usable, mm-hmm. In real life, it works. Eric's been producing all of his product that he's actually been selling to customers using a 3D, you know, a 3D printing system. And, you know, he's not even at the scale of doing injection molding, and he's been very successful with it so far. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, wish him luck on this. And secondly, we have from John's Pen regarding episode 12. Really enjoyed the podcast. I've been a first 40-miler fan since my wife and I started our hiking and camping trips earlier this year. It was interesting hearing about their first experience and the challenges they faced. At least they had someone who knew what he was doing to help them. We had to figure it all out on our own, with help from the forums, of course. Also enjoyed the segment about taking kids out. Thanks.
Yeah, that was really cool. I remember that episode as well, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it's always good to see, you know, it's good to see people learning all the ins and outs of hammock camping and just being outside and backpacking in general.
Absolutely. Before we finish up, just some quick admin trivia. I wanted to thank the folks over at the SoCal Hangers. That's SoCal for Southern California. They sent us some really cool swag, some refrigerator magnets, and a couple of patches that we have to figure out where to put, and even a cool sticker that if I had a crappy old car, I would put it on my car. But I think I might have to find something else to put on my sticker on, like my laptop or something.
Yep, there you go.
Belated thank you to Shug for sending us those awesome patches and stickers. Thank you for that. When I figure out where to put the SoCal patch, the Shug patch is going to go right next to it. So thanks, Shug, for that.
Actually, my Shug sticker's on the opposite side of my HYOH coffee mug.
Oh, sweet.
So I did find a spot for my Shug sticker.
So it's a Shug mug.
Shug mug.
With an HYOH sticker on it.
Well, the ones that Dawn made for us.
That's right. And finally, the final piece of admin trivia. Thank you for Dawn, who put together some really cool coffee mugs for us. And if anybody's interested in getting an HYOH coffee mug, reach out to Mark or me, and we'll get you guys in touch with Dawn, and she will get you a cool HYOH coffee mug. They're double-walled insulated and really awesome. They keep my coffee warm all morning.
It's a travel mug, not a regular desktop mug. Oh, right. Mug.
Yeah, it's a travel mug with a lid.
Thanks to all our donors that we've had in the past. As you know, producing and hosting a podcast isn't free, so every little bit counts. Check out our Patreon campaign at patreon.com/HYOH podcast. Or if you're a cottage vendor, consider promoting your product on our podcast for a few months. And that's the show for this month. As always, you can find us at www.hyohpodcast.com or on our Facebook page at HYOH Podcast. If you like what you hear, please give us a positive review on iTunes, or even better, you can buy us a cup of coffee by going directly to hyohpodcast.com/donate and making a one-time donation.
Don't forget to tell your friends about us, and be sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or whatever your favorite podcast app is where you get free podcasts on, including this free podcast.
As always, if you want to comment or have a question, please visit our Facebook page, or you can send me an email at mark@hyohpodcast.com.
And me at jonathan@hyohpodcast.com. Finally, special thanks to Skid Varnark for allowing us to use his music for our intro and our outro, and to ITX for hosting our podcast. Thanks, everyone, for hanging around.
Open my eyes, and what did I see? A man from Minnesota swinging tree to tree. A thin piece of fabric suspended in the air. Should I even try it?
Man, should you even dare?
Had two straps and a couple of toggles. How this would even work, my mind began to boggle. Yeah.